The views expressed on The Final Straw Radio do not necessarily reflect those of Asheville FM, Friends of Community Radio, or any of the affiliate radio stations airing the show. You're listening to WSFM LP 103.3 in Asheville, North Carolina. This is The Final Straw, and I'm William Goodenough. The show can also be heard on KXCF in Marshall, California, KWTF in Bodega Bay, California, KOWA in Olympia, Washington, and WCRS in Columbus, Ohio. The show will later be archived at thefinalstrawradio.noblogs.org, and you can email us with questions or suggestions at thefinalstrawradio@riseup.net. Also, if you're interested in rebroadcasting any segment of the show or episode, you're free to do so. Just send us an email so we know you're out there. If you care to, you can send us letters at The Final Straw, care of Asheville FM, 864 Haywood Road, Asheville, North Carolina, 28806. The show is brought to you by Firestorm Books and Coffee. Located at 610 Haywood Road, Firestorm Books and Coffee is a worker-owned cooperative in Asheville specializing in offbeat, underground, and independent literature. You can find a sample of Firestorm's catalog of books and zines, plus a full calendar of events at their website, firestorm.coop. Before the main segment of this show, we have just a few announcements. This was a statement originally posted to itsgoingdown.org, which we have shortened for broadcasting. It pertains to updates on the September 9th prison strike and includes some thoughts about how to move forward from here. For more such thoughts, you can check out the most recent IGD cast, which includes an episode with members of the IWOC, among other people. Quote, "One thing is not in question. September 9th is now officially the largest prison work strike ever to take place within the United States. This strike against prison slavery that began on September 9th, the 45th anniversary of the Attica prison uprising, has now entered its third week. According to organizers with Support Prisoner Resistance, quote, as of the 21st, we have tracked 46 prisons and jails that experienced some kind of disruption between September 8th and the 21st. This total includes both lockdowns reported by officials, some of whom deny that the lockdown was protest-related, and reports of protests from prisoners and supporters, some of which did not lead to lockdowns or full strikes. Of these, 31 facilities experienced a lockdown, suspension, or full strike for at least 24 hours. Those 31 facilities house approximately 57,000 people. That is a guess at the minimum number of prisoners affected by the nationally coordinated strike. There is likely much more going on behind the prison gates that we do not yet know about. We receive new information on a daily basis. In some places, the strike lasted a day or a weekend, but in some, it seems to be going strong 12 days in," end quote. The strike has also grown out of the original expectations of many organizers. For instance, the strike has spread into both men and women's prisons, into county jails, and has led not only to work strikes, but hunger strikes, organized marches, and protests inside facilities, expanded communication of prisoners to the outside, and full-fledged uprisings. Despite a media blackout that is fueled by the advertising of corporations that make billions from prison slavery while the mainstream press drones on about politicians which vow only to expand it, the strike is only continuing and bringing more people into our networks. On the outside, thousands of people took to the streets. In Durham, North Carolina, and Brooklyn, New York, freeways were blocked. In Oakland, corporations profiting from prison labor were attacked. In Portland, streets and stores profiting from prison labor were occupied and shut down. In Austin, people shut down a facility showcasing products made by prisoners, and demonstrations, marches, and rallies were organized throughout the South. Across the U.S., noise demonstrations outside of prisons were organized, marches were held, and graffiti, banners, and posters were placed around the walls, freeways, and towns and cities of the U.S. Across the world, people also took action in solidarity with the prison strike. From Serbia to Sweden, Greece to Australia, Mexico to Spain, people released statements of solidarity, held demonstrations outside of prisons, and took action against corporations that profit from prison slavery. Some thoughts about moving forward and where to go from here. In order to proceed, people need to develop a strategy around supporting the strike. This means figuring out if and how you can support a facility near you taking action, how you can link up and build connections with prisoners, how you could build up your organization or crew to carry out this activity, and also how you could carry out actions and which push forward the strike. Number one is supporting the strikers, which you can do by, for example, holding a demonstration outside of the facility, hold a call-in campaign to the prison to demand that the prison meet the prisoners' demands and end repressive measures, hold a letter-writing night to make contact with the prisoners. You can contact the IWOC for more information if you have no established contacts. Or you could hold fundraisers for established groups such as the Free Ohio Movement or the Free Alabama Movement. Number two is building up your crew or building up your squad. You can raise money so that you can continue or begin to engage in prison support work. Again, you can host a letter-writing night to better connect with prisoners already engaged in action. You can host a speaker, a Skype presenter, or an open discussion to discuss the current current events. You can organize a barbecue or social event where people can discuss the strike. Also, it's important to keep your energy up. You can organize a noise demonstration outside a facility, organize and take action at a corporate corporation profiting from prison slavery. You can do banner drops or graffiti, for example, or do such things as wheat pasting. Already, our comrades across the world are standing with us in solidarity. In a statement released by the ABC's Solidarity Cell in Greece, they have called for international supporters and also have taken action in support of the ongoing strike on October 1st. The September 9th strike has been inspiring, but to stop now and simply step back and wait for the next eruption would be to lose out on bringing new people into the movement. To also stop taking action now when prisoners across the U.S. are still on strike, still on hunger strike, and still risking their lives would be to betray everything that they have worked for. Now is the time to build, now is the time to grow, but is definitely not the time to stop. In March of this year, the son of Kinetic Justice was accused of stabbing Warden Davenport at Holman Prison in Alabama. He was then shipped to Donaldson. He has since been assaulted, harassed, and tortured in solitary confinement. If you support FAM, that's the Free Alabama Movement, and the work we do to let Kinetic's son show his sacrifices for change were not in vain. Those willing, drop him a postcard, and those able, put a small donation on his books via the ADOC website. You can write to this person by addressing your letters to Amir Davis, number 268646, G-4WE Donaldson CF, 1000 Warrior Lane, Bessemer, Alabama, 35023. To see a list of more people who have been explicitly targeted by officials in response to the prison strike, you can visit itsgoingdown.org. And finally, as most of you are probably aware, following the police murder of Keith Lamont Scott in Charlotte, North Carolina, who was killed while sitting in his car reading and waiting for his kid to get dropped off from school, there have been riots in that town which have lasted for days. The mainstream media coverage of these events has been predictably terrible, following all of the racist tropes we have come to expect from the likes of CNN and Fox. With an aim to combat these narratives, we at The Final Straw would like to put out a call for submissions or interviews that people would like to see broadcast on this show. Any interviews would be done from an explicitly anarchist perspective. If this is at all interesting to you or anyone you know, give us a holler at thefinalstrawradio@riseup.net. For the main segment of this episode, we're going to present a piece released from our comrades at A Radio Berlin. This piece is regarding the ongoing repression of Czech anarchists, which has been going since 2015, and this initiative is called Anti-Phoenix. Keep your ears out for an upcoming interview that we will do after they are done with their tour in Europe.
We're going to finish up this episode with a few metal and punk tracks from Wildspeaker, Alokiria, and Karaneer. What you say, what you say, what you say, what?
A guy named Michael Rodas was sent here to Warren Correctional Institution to get rehabilitated and corrected. Whatever he did to get here, the state decided to address his malfunction by subjecting him to the following situation, which is now well documented. On August 6, 2016, two corrections officers named Story and Swain, no relation, ordered Rodas to stand on a table in the cell block's day room. Story and Swain made Rodas hold a sign that said, "I like Big Dick," while singing, "I'm a Little Teapot." Keep in mind that Rodas was in a cell block with as many as 120 other prisoners, not all of whom are nice guys. At a close security prison, you have plenty of sexual predators, some who may never be getting out of prison. Also keep in mind that Story and Swain are the security officers, the very people who are supposed to protect Rodas from those sexual predators. Instead, the officers took it upon themselves to force Rodas to hold a sign declaring his appreciation for large male sex organs. The officers deliberately and premeditatedly made Rodas a sexual object in the eyes of prisoners, some of whom were no doubt sexual predators. It's a no-brainer that what they did to Rodas made him a potential target for rape. But even more, their conduct was designed to make Rodas a possible victim of rape. On top of that, given their targeting of Rodas, the officers implied that it would be okay to rape Rodas, that the officers themselves had no regard for him, and that they gave implicit permission to rape him. But beyond making Rodas a sex object in the minds of predators, and beyond implying permission to rape him, let's think about how the officers' actions reflect their own thinking. Before the event even happened, before they forced Rodas to stand on a table holding a sign declaring his appreciation for large male sex organs, there had to be thought processes that led to this, possibly some kind of conversation. These officers clearly came to the conclusion that making Rodas a sex object and subjecting him to the dangers of rape would be fun. What I'm getting at is that on some level, those officers thought about Rodas and had to have sex on their minds. Not just sex, but the thought of Rodas declaring appreciation for male sex organs and potentially suffering the foreseeable consequences. Why are Story and Swain, who are paid to create a safe living environment for prisoners, thinking of the prisoners as sex objects to be exploited and abused? Here, we're not talking about a singular event anymore, but talking about those officers' twisted worldview, their very orientation toward the human beings in their custody. In response to all of this, Rodas called the PREA hotline. PREA stands for Prison Rape Elimination Act, which is a federal program mandated on prisons, designed to address rape and sexual assault of all types. On getting Rodas's call, prison fascists began an investigation. As everything done to Rodas was caught on security cameras, this was a no-brainer. Officers Story and Swain were suspended during the investigation. Of course, during the course of all of this, all of Story's and Swain's co-workers knew what the deal was. Rodas was repeatedly subjected to retaliation and harassment designed to demoralize him and force him to change his story. At each instance, he called the PREA hotline to complain that he was subjected to retaliation for contacting PREA in the first place. Prison fascists, in response, have determined that retaliation and harassment for contacting PREA is not a PREA matter. In other words, staff can retaliate and force sexual assault victims to change their stories, and that's perfectly okay. Further, when the investigation concluded, PREA fascists decided that the actions of Story and Swain contemplated to turn Rodas into a sex object for sexual predators was only marginally related to PREA. As a consequence, Story and Swain reportedly have their jobs back, sending a clear message that Warren Correctional staff can do virtually anything to captives here. It's okay to endanger prisoners and promote sexual assault. Feel free to call PREA and tell them what you think about that. The phone number for PREA Central Office is 614-995-3584. That's 614-995-3584. And the phone number for the outside PREA line is 614-728-3155. That's 614-728-3155. This is anarchist prisoner Sean Swain from Warren Correctional, where staff promoting sexual assault is acceptable. If you're listening, you are the resistance.
You can write to Sean Swain at Sean Swain, 243-205, Warren, CI, P.O. Box 120, 5787 State Route 63, Lebanon, Ohio, 45036. For updates on his situation, his bid for U.S. president in 2016, and more writings by Sean can be found at seanswain.org.
Sagen Sie jetzt mal bitte,
Anarchie.
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 Ob geschichtlich oder brandaktuell?
Mit Berichten und Interviews, mit Beiträgen und Collagen
beleuchtet das anarchistische Radio Berlin das Phänomen des Anarchismus.
Viva Anarchie!
In the context of the International Week of Solidarity with Anarchist Prisoners from the 23rd to the 30th of August 2016, we had the opportunity of talking to a comrade from Anarchist Black Cross in Czech Republic. This interview gives a short summary of the repression that started in 2015 and explains the singular cases and their current developments, but deals also with the problems the movement had in the beginning to show solidarity. Last but not least, you get very good advice on the topic of solidarity and what to do yourselves. Since the interview, another comrade is in prison. Lukas Ball, who had been living underground, has been arrested by the police on September 4. As probably many of you remember, in 2015 there was a big wave of repression in Czech Republic in the months of April and June. And now we will be talking with a comrade from ABC, from Anarchist Black Cross in Czech Republic, about those cases and about what's happening right now, because some of those cases are going to court right now. So maybe you could, in the beginning, give us a short introduction into those cases for those who don't know about them yet.
Hello, so I'll start maybe back in April 28th when the entire repression started officially. In one night, basically police started this thing which we were preparing for a long time, which they called Operation Phoenix. And in one night, they raided several flats, a social center up north in the city of Most, confiscated many electronic devices, mostly like cameras, USB disks, hard drives, computers, and arrested, I think that night, only 11 people. Much more people were interrogated and arrested since then. In the end of the day, 6 people were accused of a conspiracy of preparation a terrorist attack against the train with military equipment, and 3 of them, police, Arna, or the prosecutor, put in custody jail. Very soon, it showed up that this case of an alleged attack against military equipment was actually part of some longer work of the state agents. It was, as we know, 2 police agents, agents provocateurs, who much earlier than that infiltrated this group, this collective of anarchists. And, you know, they just became friends. They basically started to go to shows and they started to go to pubs with them. Later on, they joined some casual actions, maybe demonstrations or some neighborhood assembly or like neighborhood party or something, block party. And they were sort of like gaining the trust and they were doing more and more progressive actions. And later on, it was them who was pushing for the actions. As usual, the agents, you know, they would have van with fuel every time and the color printer for big prints and I don't know what. They were kind of the people who in the end were organizing or like initiating the meetings and making this group being more disconnected from the rest of the movement and to focusing on something more militant. And when initiating these meetings, they would always have recording devices, and I think they also bugged the flat where these meetings were held. They brought the idea of some like more militant actions, which in the end ended up as a plan of attacking the train with military equipment. And once they had recorded that some members of this group somehow agreed, then the cage fell down. Of course, this entire work was just for starting the big wave of repression. All this police effort was to make up a case on which they can catch anarchists on terrorism and accuse them of the terrorist action, or at least of the preparation, which is in terrorist case enough. This would be about the Operation Phoenix, but it's not the only what this nationwide police crackdown against the anarchists was about, but also later on we heard about very suspicious attack. Somebody supposed to attack a house of Minister of Defense. That was kind of a strange thing because there was actually no fire. Minister of Defense said that his house was attacked with Molotov cocktails, but there was no fire. He had like special security around his house, which ended up just a day before this attack. Police was called in almost 2 days after his attack when his wife allegedly found a Molotov cocktail on a garden. They didn't call police the same night or anything like that. He was on a holiday, he wasn't home that night, but only his son and his, I don't know, some more members from the family. A lot of like very suspicious things. And, you know, also anarchists don't do such kind of actions like attacking a property with people in it, especially people who are just casual people like family, you know, family of the minister, sleeping in a house for at least 100 years in Czech Republic. And unfortunately, despite all of these very suspicious facts, it turned against us, against anarchists. And a Russian citizen anarchist, Igor Shevtsov, living in Czech Republic back then for maybe half a year, 19 years old, was accused of taking part of this totally made up attack. And he was right away put in custodial jail with a high security. That means that his mom came from Eastern Siberia. She couldn't visit him. He was there for 3 months. And then police basically realized they didn't have enough evidence in comparison to Igor's evidence, what he had, that he couldn't be on a spot of crime in a time of when they say that the crime happened. So they let him out of the custodial jail, and his court was held only a few months ago in April this year. But in the meantime, they connected it with so-called complicity on criminal damage, which is a ridiculous term saying that Igor took a part on some graffiti station on the prison walls on supporting those arrested in Phoenix. What he did actually is that he video recorded somebody else spray painting or graffitiing the wall, but they consider him to being a lookout. So he said, like, without you, the action wouldn't be done successfully as it was done. You were part of some group. And it was all bullshit because it was a spontaneous demonstration, and he was just like recording the whole demonstration, and somebody spontaneously started to spray paint. So when you're on demonstration, you want to have good videos, and then when somebody's spray painting, you're recording the spray painting. Well, also interesting thing is that they had his camera and they knew that he did it from the very beginning, but they gave him the accusation 5 months after this demonstration because they realized they don't have any evidence about the first thing at all. So they needed to find something desperately. They connected it together, and these two things, video recording somebody graffitiing and probably attentat on the Ministry of Defense in one court hearing, which is like to say that you murdered somebody and you stole a bread. You know, just like totally ridiculous thing. The court hearing in April decided that he didn't, there is no enough evidence. The judge said, unfortunately, there is not enough evidence for sentence him for the attack, so found innocent. But they gave him 2 years of deportation for the video recording spray painting. Well, he appealed and he had his appeal higher court a month ago, which means by 20th, I think, yeah, the July 20th this year. The judgment remained the same, still finding him guilty for this complicity and criminal damage, but the penalty changed and Igor is banned for attending any cultural and sporting event or attending any anarchist event like benefit demonstration, manifestation, and so on. Which is, I think, very vague and very unusual sentence. Like, this hasn't been used in here since, you know, the real socialism times, I guess. So who knows what this will mean for the future. And one thing which is important to mention, I guess, for people who never heard of that, is that in Czech Republic there is this new kind of thing, more like militant or progressive or insurrectionist actions, and there is this group, the Network of Revolutionary Cells, which claimed several sabotages on mostly police property or property of control of the state. Police claimed that Operation Phoenix actually was focused on this, the Network of Revolutionary Cells, and that the raids and everything, and that the accusation actually stopped this group, and that it was like very aimed against them. which now we can look back 15 months and none of the accused people, none of the people staying on the front of the court actually is accused of anything connected with the real sabotages which happened. And to say that police destroyed this group is totally lie, because from the when the Phoenix started, the actions of this group grew up much faster. Like they doubled almost, you know, like the police cars being burned after Phoenix started obviously increased. So I think this is long story short. I could be talking about this in many details, but I think this is about it.
You mentioned before three people were first put in custody jail, but what about the fourth one?
Well, yeah, when we talk about people in prison, there were out of six people from Phoenix, there were three from out of six people being accused in Phoenix, and later on, five of them charged, three of them being put in prison, and now only one of them is in prison right now. The fourth person who went through prison during the repression was Igor, but also there is one person, a comrade, who, because of Operation Phoenix, went underground and he went to illegality. This is a comrade called Lukáš Borl. He's like long-term organizer, being well-known for people around, like for probably over 10 years within anarchist scene. He was one of the people who was arrested in a first wave of Phoenix, and he ran the social center which was raided in the city of Most. It was called Ateneo. But later on, he just felt that there's too much of surveillance after him and that something stinks. He released a communique when he says that he went underground, and in that communique, it's been some time, but if I remember correctly, he says something like, I would either go mad because of paranoia and all this surveillance. I would either probably end up in prison because this would make me mad and like react somehow, or just like put me in prison, or I could choose to go illegal. And for me, the step was, after proceeding it in my mind, going illegal. This is kind of like quote, but I can't say it's quote because I don't remember exactly his words. But yeah, this was one of the reasons. Now police actually, in April this year, 2016, put his picture on their official webpage as wanted, armed and dangerous, which I've never seen him being armed before. And dangerous, even like people who killed two people sometimes are not labeled dangerous there. So it's everything is more about like the politics and the ideas. And then he responded on his blog that, yeah, I'm dangerous because, you know, like being conflictual with the system and talking against the repressions and the state. And yeah, I'm armed with like my ideas and blah, blah. So it's like an interesting to watch like police and then his reactions. And as what he says, he moves like pretty freely somewhere around the world. I don't know.
Okay, let's go back to the Phoenix case and the wave of repression. How did the anarchist scene or the anarchist movement react? And I know this is anti-Phoenix group. In what way do you deal with this repression?
This had like several phases. When the first one was maybe the most crucial one and the hardest one at the same time. Because when the Phoenix started, the movement definitely wasn't ready for that. And the reaction of most of the people was like, whoa, look, like the terrorism, you know, like how the word, how it like it's made to scare people, right? A lot of people would sort of like step back and like waiting what's gonna happen, or distance themselves from the accused ones. And don't get me wrong, I think it's totally natural reaction, but I don't think this will save us in like longer term. So our biggest task was to be the bridges between the accused ones, between this maybe insurrectionist group, which everyone like automatically, okay, police said that the accused ones are from that group, so they would distance themselves. So even though I don't agree with everything this group says, I don't agree with everything what the accused one says, then we had to be the bridges in between them and the movement to make people understand that making the step back is not gonna like save us or make us any safer, even though it might seem like that is gonna put us from not being under a spotlight. So like our rhetorics would be always that doing the step back will only and always show the authorities that the repression was successful. That they can anytime oppress us one by one, anytime they want, because they know that we will just step back. You know, like after 2 or 3 months it showed up that there was this police entrapment and everything became much easier. But in the meantime, when people thought that the comrades wanted to blow up a train, very little people would support them. So we are like in kind of, in this phase, in kind of unpopular position, because we would always like bring in the questions like, we're not saying they wanted to do that, that's what police says and we definitely shouldn't follow that. But even if somebody would wanted to blow up a train with military equipment, or blow up is a big word, that's what police says, they actually are accused of wanted to throw a Molotov cocktail on it, which is on a train, it's not gonna blow it up. So we would always like keep the narrative back to sort of like change discourse and be like, hey, don't follow this, don't fall in trap of this terrorism and legality and violence or something, you know, think about, even if you believe they wanted to do it, think about what is military equipment used for, how many people would die if the military equipment would get to the places where Czech Republic sells, you know, most like Saudi Arabia, which goes obviously to ISIS, and who profits from wars, who are the casualties, and then we try to brought some answers to that, you know, like, so probably it's actually more safer for people if it gets prevented from getting where it should get. Yeah, but it was very unpopular in the beginning. But I think during the time, another phase was when it showed up that it was police entrapment. Then a lot of people started to connect to us and they realized how actually it's rotten that police can go so far that they would put state agents, infiltrate a group just to be able to start the repressions. And that helped us to connect with much more people. And that is Igor's case. Fortunately, Igor is like, you know, he's a very social person. Now in the end, when his courts were going on, there was like the universities having his back. There was some different collectives who were like supporting him. So it got very big media coverage. So actually, and Igor, I think, was like, he just like realized that this space opened and that he can to media says whatever he wants. And that they will just like report it because they want that sensation to sell. So I think that that was like the third phase since the Igor's case show up that it's like such a bullshit and that they try to like, you know, they even police said that he's pro-Putin anarchist, which is such a nonsense, you know, it's like to say pro-Hitler anarchist. Well, picturing him like that and making a lot of lies, long time it was really hard for us, but the repressive forces working on very tiny ice doing that, because at one point, it just all can turn and everyone is making fun out of this thing. And a lot of people are like, well, I'm the terrorist then probably. If he's the terrorist, I'm the terrorist as well. And now like a lot of people from the universities and different collectives from like the wider supporters of Clinica. I don't mean only those radical kids running Clinica, but like those like thousands of people backing it up. You know, like all these people now are interested in this case and connecting the Clinica's eviction and the strong borders. And so we try to like, for us, now, for me, it's the most important, not anymore to make people support those few accused ones, because that is happening on itself, but now the most important task for me at this point, August 2016, is to intersect different topics and make people realize that the same structures, not necessarily the same people, but the same structures and run by the same institutions, mostly by the one called police, are the one who several times, like, who evicted all the squads back in Czech Republic's Klinika, where we're sitting right now. The same people who made up all these cases, the same people who led the migrants behind the borders and try to like intersect these topics to make people understand that it's not about few anarchists maybe going to prison, but it's about much bigger thing. And I think now it opened like really great possibilities for discussions about these things.
So if people want to get more in-depth information and what's going on with the court cases also, how can they find it?
I didn't mention one thing when you're asking that actually the Phoenix case, the people who are accused about this, like alleged, this made-up attack on a train, the court case is just started. So they are not accused anymore, they are charged. And the court cases started, there were first 2 days of them, August 2nd and 3rd, but not much really happened because the case is so big, so they were just like doing their summary of that. So just wanted to mention that the cases are going on. The next hearings will be in from October 3rd to October 7th. And to find out more, I'm part of this collective called Anti-Phoenix as well, which is like connected to Anarchist Black Cross. We run web pages, antiphoenix.cz, and it's spelled, Phoenix is in a, like in Czech, so it's antiphoenix.cz. So you type that, and on the right side, there is like categories, and in a category you choose whatever language you speak. In some we have basic information, in English we try to do the most important information, and if you happen to speak Czech, then there's actually like very detailed informations we take as well from different medias, interviews. Now we did pretty cool thing, I think. We just published interview with Martin. in prison, which was the first interview with him since he is in prison for 15 months. You can find a lot in Czech, but there is definitely the most important information's probably more than enough in English.
Is there anything else you would like to mention?
I would like to mention, when you're talking about anarchist prisoners, that there'll be just in very soon coming the International Week of Supporting the Anarchist Prisoners. Or it actually started today. Yeah, it just started today. So from the 23rd August till the 30th of August is the International Week of Support of Anarchist Prisoners in particular. And as a week of solidarity with anarchist prisoners. But I would like to also mention, which is very important to me, that if you from faraway places, or if you feel you don't have any resources, or if you feel this is some like exotic thing somewhere in Czech Republic which you never heard of, and you don't know how to support, it's totally fine. Like, what us as Anarchist Black Cross, we don't try to make everyone in the world focus on one campaign. It's obvious that wherever you listeners are from, this is not the most important part of your life, as it's for me, because it's very personal and very local for us. But I think the anti-repression, prison abolition struggle, it's not locally, geographically, nor politically isolated campaign. I think it's important to fight against the structures which keep this being possible wherever you are from. And if you have the spare time to check our webpage, it's not important that you will start to follow or like send emails or whatever, support us somehow. But I hope that we can be helpful for sharing these experiences and make you guys, wherever you are, being ready for that. Because in many places people feel like, well, this can't happen here, you know, things are so calm and this is definitely so far away. Well, this is how we felt the April 27th last year as well. Then the April 28th came and everything turned 180 degrees overnight. So if you can get anything from our experiences, if you can be unhelpful, that's to me much more important than to try to make everyone start to gather money for us or whatever. Last but not least, I'd like to appeal on everyone who can have spare 5-10 minutes. Take a card or take a piece of paper and write to a prisoner of your choice. Well, we got one prisoner here. You can find his address on the webpage. I'm not making you guys convinced to send everything to this person. Where are you from? You have probably a lot of comrades in prisons near to you, or which you can relate yourself much more closely maybe than to Martin. So just pick one and send him or her or them a card, letter, or anything you want. Because for you, you know, it's gonna be 10 or 15 minutes, but for these people, it can be the only connection they have with the outside world for the day or week maybe. Yeah, so I think the most importantly, wherever you stand, on any place in the world, on any position, just fight from your own ground against the structures which keep this going. That's the most important to me.
Thank you very much and a lot of strength.
Thank you for the space in your wonderful project and a lot of energy for the future. Thank you.
Next up, we'll hear Kara Neer with Halo of Grey from their 2016 split with Wildspeaker entitled Guilt and His Reflection. Kara Neer is from Arlington, Texas. This is Alokiria from Athens, Greece. The album is Omonoia, and the song is Humanity is False. Thank you. Finally, this is Wild Speaker from their 2016 split with Kara Neer. This track is called His Reflection.
The show will later be archived at thefinalstrawradio.noblogs.org, and you can email us with questions or suggestions at thefinalstrawradio@riseup.net. Also, if you're interested in rebroadcasting any segment of the show or episode, you're free to do so. Just send us an email so we know you're out there. If you care to, you can send us letters at The Final Straw, care of Asheville FM, 864 Haywood Road, Asheville, North Carolina, 28806.